Yeah, it's Friday. You still here? Oh, my God. All right, well, I'm here, too. It's 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. Hey, I got this from Gordon late this afternoon. He wants me to plug something, and I'll be happy to do it. There's going to be a free root beer and cookie social this Saturday, tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. at People's Plaza, also known as the Hennepin County Government Center Plaza in, I guess that's downtown Minneapolis. This is being held for the woman who won a $15,000 lawsuit against the county for trespassing charges. She won, not them. And the story from the Minneapolis Star Tribune is this. A Minneapolis woman who was charged with trespassing during the Occupy Minnesota demonstrations last year will be paid $15,000 by Hennepin County as part of a lawsuit settlement that also changes the county's trespassing appeal policy. Her name is Melissa Lynn Hill. She was issued a trespass notice October 13th for writing slogans in chalk on the Hennepin County Government Center Plaza. The county barred her from the plaza property for a year. 2 days later, while serving as a legal observer for the National Lawyers Guild, she was arrested by a deputy sheriff while she was standing on a sidewalk adjacent to the plaza. Her attorney sued the sheriff, Rich Stanek, two deputies, a security officer of the county, and others associated with the county, alleging that Ms. Hill's due process and other constitutional rights were violated. Now, under the settlement dated this past January, a month ago, Hill may now go into Hennepin County property again, or onto. She agreed not to write in chalk or otherwise deface county property. Her attorney said, quote, the county has changed its policy to provide more due process for people who want to challenge decisions that ban them from county property. Hill said, quote, I feel I was vindicated. She's a records clerk at a law firm. She said, quote, I was arrested on a public sidewalk. This sends a strong message that they can't be misusing their trespass policy to suppress free speech, end quote. Occupy Minnesota protesters have claimed that the county used trespass notices to drive them off Government Center Plaza, which the county denied. So, apparently, according to Gordon here, there's going to be a free root beer and cookie social this Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. at People's Plaza, also known as the Hennepin County Government Center Plaza, for the woman who won that lawsuit against the county. So if you live in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, it might be a fun way to spend a couple hours tomorrow. Is it supposed to snow in Minneapolis? I think it is. Well, just wear your long johns and your heavy-duty mittens and go hang out with Miss Hill. Things are just so bizarre. By the way, we have podcast trivia tonight, a little bit later in the program. So stick around for that. This hour is being sponsored by Diane in Kansas. No jokes. No Dorothy Kansas, you know. Diane in Kansas. Her message, hi, Mike. I'm still searching for truth in the heartland, and I still rely on your podcasts. Best wishes, Diane in Kansas. Thank you, Diane. Which might be a good time to mention about those podcasts. Let me tell you something, folks. We need some subscribers, and we need them quick. I'm not talking about 20. I'm talking about 500, 1,000. I'm serious as a heart attack here. It'll cost you $56 and, what, 90 cents? 40 cents. $56 and 40 cents a year. That works out to about 25 cents per program. Come on. The reason I mention this, we went to do tax prep today with our own personal taxes. Oh boy, and our little company, Malloy Broadcasting, and our accountant just looked at us and kind of shook his head, took another bite of his cheese sandwich, and said, "Well, this will be quick." So seriously, I'm not kidding at all. As you know, we don't work for anybody. No station, no network, no super PAC, no company, no nothing. And I don't have Glenn Beck's money. So what we're looking for is for you to buy a one-year podcast. That's all, $56.40 for the year. All you have to do is go to MikeMalloy.com, and it'll show you how to do that. But I haven't made one of these appeals here recently. But we want to continue what we're doing. We want to continue this this struggle. Is that what we're doing? You know, sometimes it feels like a moth flying ever closer to one of those bug zapper machines. But we want to continue to do as long as we can. No, you don't have to contribute. You don't have to sponsor an hour. That'll cost you $100. You know, unless you're feeling wealthy or something. But for $56.40, you get a one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads of this program. And we're coming up to crunch time. So I'm not going to dwell on this a lot. I might mention a couple more times next week, but we certainly need folks to subscribe to the podcast. Now is the time to do it. And I'm again, I realize we only have 37 listeners, and all of you are already podcast subscribers. So I don't know how we're going to get another 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 podcast subscribers. Maybe my figures are off. We don't have 37 listeners. Maybe we do have 10,000 or 100,000 or 200,000. I don't know. So anyway, to Diane in Kansas, thank you. And thank you for relying on the podcast. Thanks, Diane, for the sponsorship. Crazy Catholics don't just exist here. I got this from freethinker.co.uk. It's from actually from New Zealand. You know that billboard that was up? It's a picture of supposedly the Virgin Mary looking at a pregnancy test device. Remember that? And she's got this shocked look on her face. Well, a guy named Arthur Skinner, a member of a splinter Catholic outfit in New Zealand, went after this billboard and ripped it to pieces. According to Freethinker, the scissors-wielding lunatic, part of the Catholic Action Group, removed a section of the poster at the weekend, then took part in a 100-strong prayer service outside the St. Matthew and the City Anglican Church, which had put up the billboard. He said he would destroy the poster again if it was replaced. This is also what he said. This is satanic. This is the ultimate satanic attack. When Lucifer attacks his worst enemy, the Blessed Virgin, this particular church, so-called, is run by a gay, feminist-type lobby. They claim to be Christian, in that they put up a blasphemous image of the Virgin Mary attacking her virginity and the fact that she was the mother of Christ, the God-man. Mr. Skinner also accused the Anglican Church of generally being, quote, basically heretics. There's only one faith, the Roman Catholic Apostolic faith, because we go right back in our papal line to Christ. All the other sects and cults are, in fact, man-made. Doesn't mean we condemn the individuals in them. We simply condemn their teaching. End quote. He said those responsible for the poster would, oh, here's a surprise, burn in hell if they did not repent. It's not the first time that this church has caused controversy with its billboards. 2 years ago, it displayed a poster showing Mary and Joseph in bed with the caption, poor Joseph, God was a hard act to follow. Yeah, oh my goodness, we'll be right back.
Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Big songs and
The quality of mercy is not
greater than martyrs. Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. No, it's not church night again. It's just that the Republicans have saturated the political system here with this religious nonsense, and it seems to be spreading. I mean, look what's going on now in Afghanistan. How many more people were shot dead today because of the allegedly inadvertent burning of several copies of the Quran? And these crazy, this crazy man, the scissors man in New Zealand, and look at the candidates for president, the Republicans anyway, in this country. This is an obscenity. This is just a total, the whole thing is just completely obscene. And it's difficult for me to stay away from the topic because nobody will cut your throat quicker than a religious fanatic. I mean, come on. That's the reason. You know, I can live peacefully with just about any political stripe. Well, okay, maybe not any. But I will tell you what, I would rather have, you know, some political extremist living next to me rather than a religious extremist. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. So that's why, this stuff has to be vetted. And, you know, this 25-cent radio program is about the only place you're going to hear this frothing, screaming, anti-religious stuff. I don't know, was it Wednesday something? I talked about Callista Gingrich having committed adultery for 4 or 5 years because of her Roman Catholic faith. And did she confess to her priest? And what did the priest say? And blah, blah, blah. Well, I got an email from Pam. She says, Mike, unless there's been a change of doctrine in the Roman Catholic Church since I grew up as the only Protestant on a block next to to Francis de Chantel in its elementary school, anyone who is married, quote, quote, outside the Catholic Church is not actually married, quote, quote, in the eyes of the Catholic doctrine, and their children are all bastards. See Henry VIII. Well, it is naughty to have sex outside of marriage. The Catholic Church has been notoriously lax at punishing such behavior, along with drinking, gambling, dancing, worldly acts that are all condemned or sternly frowned upon by fundamentalist Protestants. Somewhere I heard that Newt credits his conversion to attending church with Callista, where she sang like an angel in the choir. So, and she signs from a podcast subscriber in Himachal Pradesh, India, who's just now listening to Tuesday's program. Love and happy Tibetan New Year of the Water Dragon wishes to you and all your family. Signed, Pam. From Himachal Pradesh, India. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. So I guess if Callista is boinking a Protestant, then he's not, or a married Protestant, he's not really married. Or a married Jew, or a married Hindu, or a married agnostic, or atheist, or married anything other than another Catholic. It's not adultery. I guess. I mean, not that I care, but thanks, Pam, for the enlightenment. I'm sure that's the little wormhole that Callista squirmed through. I just like to know how she squirmed through without disturbing her hair. Oh my God. Oh, and this one, I don't know. I thought about whether or not I should bring this one to your attention. This is from Wasilla High School in Wasilla, Alaska. A 12.5-foot sculpture installed on the front lawn of Wasilla High School has caused a controversy. Yes, in Sarah Palin's hometown, students began joking that the artwork looks like female genitalia. That's according to the Frontiersman. That's the newspaper. Alaska Daily News also reports on this. The sculpture is called Warrior Within. It's made from stone and concrete. Its perceived resemblance to a vagina comes from the two carved shields, one made of bronze, the other aluminum, that are surrounded by feathers that form the focal point. This is all done in stone, of course. Stone. The work was reviewed and approved by the school district. before it was installed last month. Then adolescent snickering kicked in, and it quickly became too loud for the administration to ignore. 3 days after being unveiled, it was covered up. The principal of the school claims it was put under wraps to protect the piece from vandals, not to censor the bawdy talk. The school reversed its decision about 2 weeks later, removing the tarp from the sculptor, Warrior Within, ahead of a parent-teacher conference. Jim Dalt and Shayla Dobson, the artists who built the sculpture, were scheduled to lead workshops at Wasilla High to teach the kids about the meaning behind the work. The Frontiersman quoted a description of the sculpture written by the artistic partners. Here's what, how they wrote it. Emerging from the powerful stone form are two warrior shields encircled by glowing feathers. The bronze shield has a hand impression showing good deeds. The aluminum shield has a flame symbol representing the spark of inspiration. The stone form represents the strong material from which a warrior is made. And the principal there, Amy Spargo, wants a little maturity. She said, where this goes is going to depend on the Wasilla High community, and I really believe everyone needs a voice. I want the kids to have education when they look at it. I don't want it to be defaced. I don't want it to be a big joke. Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? We'll be right back. Is being sponsored by Diane in Kansas. Thank you, Diane. Her message, Mike, I'm still searching for truth in the heartland, and I still rely on your podcasts. Thank you, Diane. Thanks for the sponsorship. Diane in Kansas. I got an email from Bob the other day, not a moment with Bob, but he sent me an email. Actually, this came in today. He sent me an email yesterday. Today, he wrote this. Hey, Mike, yesterday I wrote, now there's no way in hell any of these blanket idiots is ever going to be elected president. He's referring to Republicans. They exist only to scare the herd into voting for Obama. You know, the unscary guy who signed off on the National Defense Authorization Act, the moderate fascist. And he goes on, and today I see, and he links to a Crooks and Liars article, Bill Maher makes a $1 million donation to Obama Political Action Committee. Quote, if the Republican world that we have seen described in the past year in these debates and over the last hour in my little performance for you tonight doesn't scare the blank out of you, this is Maher talking, I don't know what does. I'm doing it not just for a better nation, but to actually protect whatever money I have left. This is the wisest investment I think I could make on a selfish level, because I'll tell you something, folks, who I know look at these Republican clowns and think it's in the bag. No, it's not. Obama could lose. This is America. Remember, we only get two parties and half the country is effing nuts. That was Bill Maher explaining why he was donating $1 million to a man who signed off on the NDAA, which authorizes detention of American citizens in military prisons with no charges, no trial, no recourse, and no constitutional rights. Huh. Bob Alexander goes on. And then there's this, also from Crooks and Liars. The title is Between a Rock and a Hard Place, Labor is Back in Democratic Campaign's Corner. And, you know, I took a look at the article. And, yeah, the unions, of course, picked the steady drip, drip, drip of Blue Dog Democrat and New Democrat policies that actually weaken unions and the rights of working people versus the chainsaw massacres of the Republican Party. Drip, drip. And then Bob writes, the elite, the corporatocracy, the powers that be, the dark overlords, whatever you want to call them, are scaring us again. Goes all the way back to, ooh, Goldwater is not, so vote for Johnson. The guy who gave his puppet masters the Vietnam War. Oh, the Republicans are not, so vote for Obama. The guy who gave his puppet masters every goddamn thing they asked for. I got to bring up the NDAA again, Bob writes. The gulag awaits. The procedure on how we get inside has been signed into law by Barack Obama. Going to hell at 50 miles an hour is the exact same thing as going to hell at 1,000 miles an hour. Liberals continue to talk as if there's some brink we can still pull back from. Our bus sailed over the cliff on December 12th, 2000. It hit a ledge on the way down where the United States invaded Iraq. It bounced off another outcropping of rock in 2004 and are still heading for the rocks below. It's called gravity. The confused passengers on the bus see that we're airborne and they think we're flying. Yeah, straight down. And no, we're not buying more time by voting for Democrats. We're wasting the time we've got left. We should be spending our time minimizing the crash landing that is coming as sure as God made Valium. Is this too much like, repent, the end is near? Sandwich boards the Jesus crazies wear? Yeah, probably. But geez, it's just so obvious that they've cranked up the Operation Boo machine again. Bob. Yeah. $1 million? Bill Maher. Man, write a check for $1 million. Of course, Obama, who said he would never do what the bad guys are doing and allow super PAC money to infest his campaign, suddenly his spokesman came up with this thing about, well, you know, if you're if you're going to go to a knife fight, you don't bring a salt and pepper shaker. You know, you bring a machine gun. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what I don't know. Who's his advisor now? Who said that? His former press secretary? Somebody said that. That Obama had no choice. Really? You have no choice when you're faced with fraud and deceit and lies and deception except to do the same thing? I'll be goddamn. I didn't realize that. That's not what I learned at my grandma's Sunday school. That's not what I learned in Boy Scouts. That's not what I learned from my mother. That's not what I learned the once and occasional class course in ethics or political science that I took somewhere along the way. I just don't remember that part where it says if your enemy decides to cheat, lie, and steal, you should get rid of your ethical commitments and cheat, lie, and steal back. What's fair for the goose? Of course, they didn't say what's fair for the goose. They said what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, i.e. the goose is cooked. So, I know that a lot of people who listen to this program and are barely able to tolerate my ongoing anti-Democratic Party and anti- more or less, Barack Obama riff. I know you put up with it. I know you say, well, Malloy will come along. Come election day in November, he has to do what the rest of us do. Hold your nose and go and vote for the lesser of two evils. All I can say is don't count on that. Don't count on that. Not from me. I'm serious as a heart attack. I just, Because the election that, you know, that is referenced a lot, election 1964, that was the first one I could vote in, the presidential election 1964. And I can remember very proudly voting for Lyndon Johnson. I mean, after all, he picked up the mantle of Camelot when the president was gunned down by the commies. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was gunned down by the communist Lee Harvey Oswald. We all knew that. For about a week or two, we knew that. You know, until Lee Harvey got gunned down. I realize it didn't take a week or two. They got Lee Harvey 4 days later? But I can remember voting for Johnson. And I actually saw the Daisy ad that is referenced a lot, that the LBJ committee to elect or reelect, well, actually elect. He had never been elected president. He'd been, you know, by succession. But I saw that ad, and I had no idea that historians now say it was only run once. That shows you how much of a TV junkie I was back then, I guess. The one where the little girl is pulling the petals off. And when she gets the last one off, you sink into her, the iris of her eye, into the blackness. This is back in black and white TV, man. I mean, really, it's very effective. And then kaboom, the mushroom cloud, if you vote for Barry Goldwater. So, and what always gets me, a little quirk of history, Stephanie Miller's father ran on that ticket. Goldwater Miller? The Miller on that ticket was Stephanie Miller's dad. How about that? But anyway, voting for the lesser of two evils or you know, going in the voting booth as is tradition now in if you're a Democrat, and holding your nose and punching the button or pulling the lever or pushing out the chat or whatever it is that that you do. How many times, dear God, how many times are you supposed to do that? And again, I know I have people listen to this this program say, Mike, you should do it as often as necessary. Go ahead and vote for Obama. And that gives us 4 years to organize progressives and challenge, because 2016 is going to be wide open. and I guess in a different universe, that's a very valid point. But heard it before. I think we were even talking about that during the last presidential election. You know, you can't vote for McCain. You've got to vote for Obama. But what about his record as a senator? What about his record in the Illinois Senate, the Illinois legislature? What about that? I mean, there is a paper trail. Granted, he's a freshman senator, but look. No. Don't look. You know, listen to McCain Palin. And then be afraid, be very afraid, and vote for Obama. Yeah, okay.
Progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
I would not run from the bar. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun. Fly into the sun. Fly into the sun.
I'd break up. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by, and bless her heart, Diane in Kansas. Her message, Mike, I'm still searching for truth in the heartland, and I still rely on your podcasts. Best wishes, Diane in Kansas. It's out there somewhere, Diane. Isn't it? Yeah, it's got to be. Keep looking, honey bunny. When you find it, let us know, because I'd like to see it, too. The other night, when I was talking about Obama apologizing profusely to, of all people, Hamid Karzai and the government of Afghanistan and the people of Afghanistan for the burning of three or four, or whatever it was, copies of the Quran. And I said at the time a couple of things, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. The apology will do nothing. Our list of atrocities in Afghanistan is so long and so bloody and so horrifying. I mean, why are we there anyway, in somebody else's country where they want to live as though it were the 14th century, and they should be allowed to do that? You know what I'm saying? Really. If they brutalize women and children, then I don't know. I don't know how to respond to that. If it were up to me, I would drag them all by their beards into the street and lop their heads off. But it's not up to me. It's their country, not mine. It's their culture, their society, not mine. I have enough trouble trying to adjust to and understand this one, much less that one. But as I said, and again, any fool could figure this out, and yeah, I'll play the fool, that two things would happen. There would be riots that would spiral out of control this time, which it appears is going to happen, and Megadeth, which is happening. I think another 11 people were killed by Afghan troops in the rioting, the religious rioting. And the second thing, I said, watch and see how long it takes, probably one news cycle, for these Republican cockroaches to get on Obama for apologizing to begin with. And sure enough, Newt Gingrich said yesterday that the U.S. apology to Afghan authorities for burned Qurans on a military base was, in Newt's words, astonishing and undeserved. Let me ask you something, you rotund Pillsbury doughboy bastard. Supposing somebody ripped your sanctimonious bull crap and your vestments and your rosaries out of your hands and that freaky-looking wife of yours and burned them. What would you do? What would you do, Newt? Would you sit back on your lard ass and just go, well, tisk, tisk? Well, he probably would. Anyway, as reported by somebody, Gingrich lashed out at Obama for the formal apology after copies of the Muslim holy book were found burned in a garbage pit. Campaigning in Washington State, Gingrich said Afghan President Hamid Karzai owes the U.S. an apology. Now, think of this rancid, putrid son of a bitch, Newt Gingrich. We invade their country. 10 years we have been in there. Killing, butchering, murdering, torturing, kidnapping. And Newt Gingrich says our puppet dictator owes us an apology. Calm down, Mike. Take a deep breath real quick. Hold it. Let it out slowly. Okay. Gingrich said, quote, there seems to be nothing that radical Islamists can do to get Barack Obama's attention in a negative way, and he is consistently apologizing to people who do not deserve an apology of the President of the United States, period. Gingrich. He added, quote, and candidly, if Hamid Karzai, the President of Afghanistan, doesn't feel like apologizing, then we should just say goodbye and good luck. We don't need to be here risking our lives and wasting our money on somebody who doesn't care, end quote. Now, doesn't that last statement sound like a whiny little goddamn teenager? P. picking zits off his face where he blobbers into YouTube something like, well, if you don't feel like apologizing, Ralph, for, you know, grabbing my underpants the other day, well, you know, goodbye and good luck. I don't have to be going to the same high school as you and wasting my time around people like you. Huh? Yeah, yeah. I was expecting to hear Gingrich finish up by saying, yeah, 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 yeah. And this guy wants to be president? Are you kidding me? And people are voting for him! He added to the adding that he had already added, quote, this president's gone so far at appeasing radical Islamists that he is failing in his duty as commander-in-chief. Now, I don't mean to accredit Gingrich with anything rational. I point this out to show you the corruption that is now the grease that runs the political system in the United States. And I ask you, Truth Seeker, how to deal with this. When we come back, Jeb Bush freaks out. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. At least it is tonight, unless we've been preempted by high school basketball someplace. Kathy, open up the phone lines, will you? We're going to do a podcast trivia a little bit later this hour, but go ahead. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556 if you want to chat. This hour is being sponsored by Ian, and his message, the sponsorship is for Charlie Grace Fiorella, who will be 1 year old tomorrow, and her truth-seeking dad, John. Mike, Ian writes, don't ever stop stripping the bark off those right-wing sons of bitches. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Yours truly, Ian. Thank you, Ian. So for Charlie Grace Fiorella, happy birthday tomorrow. And her truth-seeking dad, John, happy Charlie Grace's birthday to you, too. Oh, that's nice. 1 year old. Man. Hold on tight, John. Let me tell you something. Molly is 7 and a half, and it seems like yesterday she was 1 year old. It just goes like this. Listen. The time I'm talking about. Jeb Bush freaks out. He said he finds some of the rhetoric coming out of the pie holes of these Republican candidates, these Republican trolls that are running for president, he finds some of the rhetoric a little troubling. His words, quote, a little troubling. He says this, quote, I used to be conservative, and I watch these debates, and I'm wondering, I don't think I've changed, but it's a little troubling sometimes when people are appealing to people's fears and emotion rather than trying to get them to look over the horizon for a broader perspective, and that's kind of where we are, end quote. When, did you ever tell that to your brother, you two-bit cheese hole, you? I mean, you're the guy. Jeb Bush is the one out there trying to screw everybody on the charter school system with his phony. You know, he's got Saudi business partners, too, or at least he did. Or are they Kuwaiti? I don't know. You know, these Bush boys, they get their money. Either they steal it or they get it from people who are ripping off the American consumer. It doesn't matter to the Bush boys. Don't be kidded by Jeb. I get a lot of emails from people that say, well, it's going to be a brokered Republican convention, and Jeb Bush is going to rise on a platform from the back of the stage in a cloud of dry ice fumes, and he's going to step forward, and the crowd will go crazy! Yes, Jeb! And Jeb Bush has the balls to say it's a little troubling when people appeal to other people's fears and emotion. After he had a brother for 8 years who had attorneys general and all kinds of freaks working for him who absolutely filled this country to the brim with fear. Sit down, Jeb, and shut up. Go back to hustling your investors about how you're going to revamp education in this country. Another Bush scum sucker. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. In an interview with a local CBS affiliate, Jeb cautioned the contenders, the four horsemen of the apocalypse out there, not to campaign too far to the right. Oh, Jeb. Well, then, I guess they're certainly going to straighten out their acts now that Jeb has spoken. Jeb speaks! He said, quote, I think it's important for the candidate to recognize, though they have to appeal to primary voters and not turn off independent voters, it will be part of a winning coalition. End quote. Bush, Jeb, shot down speculation that he would enter the 2012 race and said that the nominee would be one of the candidates currently in the race. Oh, and former White House senior advisor, the foul-smelling, hideous, corpulent, rat bastard Karl Rove said he shared Jeb Bush's concern on an interview on the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. Karl Rove said, quote, look, I share his concern. These debates have tended to sort of focus the effort on exactly what he says, operating out of fear, in part because of the nature, the kind of questions, and the fact that they're all trying to gain an advantage over each other. This from Karl Rove, this stinky breath, foul-mouthed little turd that helped to turn this country into a fear-riddled concentration camp of right-wing psychos. What? All right, something like that. I don't know. I get lost in the. An Oklahoma congressman, U.S. Representative John Sullivan, apologized today for suggesting that, quote, killing a couple of U.S. senators, end quote, may be the only way to get a budget passed through Congress. Yeah. He made the comments Wednesday during a town hall meeting in Bixby, Oklahoma. When asked about federal spending, the Republican from Tulsa expressed his frustration with the Senate for its failure to approve a budget. He's not in the Senate. He's a House member, of course. He said at the event, quote, I'd love to get them to vote for it. Boy, I'd love that, you know. But other than me going over there with a gun and pointing it to their head and maybe killing a couple of them, I don't think they're going to listen unless they get beat. Isn't that a great sentence? Isn't that a great sentence? I mean, forget the implied murder rage of this freak. But listen, other than me going over there with a gun and pointing it to their head, You mean their heads? Oh, never mind. To their head and maybe killing a couple of them. I don't think they're going to listen unless they get beat. These comments were first posted on the blog Talking Points Memo. A spokesman for this piece of human waste said today that the congressman was speaking off the cuff during the town hall meeting and sincerely apologized for his remarks and his crappy grammar and his brutalization of American, even American English. The spokesman said that Sullivan also spoke during the event about the importance of civility in Washington. The spokesman said in a statement, "The congressman offers his sincere apologies to anyone he offended and for using a poor choice of words to make his point, which was that Senate Democrats are refusing to pass a budget or even vote on the 28 House-passed jobs bills. Millions of Americans are hurting. The congressman feels their pain and does not want his comments to deflect attention away from the serious issues our country faces today, like controlling a woman's vagina all the way up into her uteri. And he certainly does not condone any form of violence as a means to fix what is broken in Washington, unless, as the congressman said, it's putting a bullet into the heads of a couple of Democratic senators. That would be okay. That would not be violence. The Senate or the representative believes that would be a mercy killing," end quote. Wow, man. That's quite a statement. And the guy making the statement said that the congressman has not been contacted by law enforcement about his remarks.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Finally, this hopeless feeling like I need a hole in my head.
21 past the hour. Give up my whole day wages. The number here again, 877-996-2556. Now, think about this for a second. U.S. Representative John Sullivan from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Republican, of course, says that the one way to get a budget passed through Congress is to for him to take a gun and go over there and kill a couple of U.S. senators. Wasn't it just a year ago that there was a shooting in Arizona where a U.S. representative, some freak goddamn Glenn Beck fan, decided to assassinate a U.S. representative, and six people were murdered, 13 others wounded, including Sullivan's former colleague, Representative Gabriel Giffords, who was shot in the head? Son of a bitch. What about the 30 Americans that are killed by gunfire every single day? And this piece of human waste, these are your Republicans, you see? Well, I'm going to get a gun and go over and kill a couple of them. And then a Glenn Beck listener or a Limbaugh listener will say, you know, that's not a bad idea. I think I'll go get a gun. And Jesus Christ. This is not the first time one of these Oklahoma lawmakers, made remarks about guns. In August, U.S. Senator Tom Coburn, in describing his frustration with Congress, said, quote, "It's a good thing I can't pack a gun on the Senate floor," end quote. His office, Coburn's office, issued an apology, but Coburn himself told his critics, "Get over it! Political correctness is BS. Tell them to get over it. It's a joke. Everybody laugh. That's all I have to say about it." But Gabriel Giffords didn't laugh, you piece of... Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. These guys never quit, do they? They just don't quit. Doug is in Oakland, California. Hey, Doug.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
Well, on January 28th, we were just doing our First Amendment thing, and I'm sure you've heard about it. I haven't been able to talk about it because I was there photographing the scene and we got kettled. They were firing tear gas at us.
Oh, yeah.
They were firing rubber bullets, shotguns. I had a friend shot with a BB beanbag, and then they broke his glasses, and then they said that they arrested him for assaulting an officer.
Right.
And we ran up into the YMCA and got booked for felony burglary for running away. And I was running from a cop who broke his baton, a 3-foot baton, right behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were sent to Santa Rita Jail. And we were not booked for 72 hours, so my wife had no idea what happened. We were disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not allowed our medicines. We were sent up into the general population. We were not given water. We were given bologna for 5 days straight. And now I have they didn't drop the orders. They just haven't filed them for 3 years. I have to call every day to make sure that I'm not going to get a warrant for my arrest. And this, we did nothing. I mean, nothing. We were not violent, but they were so violent. And I just have to get the story out there. And I heard your story about this woman, Melissa Van Hill, or whatever, for her trespassing. I'm just wondering what's going to happen. These Oakland cops are getting away with everything. And I'm telling you, it's a war.
Well, it is, and it's not just Oakland, it's not just Minneapolis, here in the Atlanta area, the same thing. And you're right, it is a war, and how people respond, how citizens respond to this war by the national security state is going to determine who's the winner. We can respond by fighting force with force, which is not going to work, Doug, as you know, because they have the guns and the bullets and the cannons and the bombs and the drones and the tear gas and the pepper spray and the handcuffs and the jails. So the only way to respond to this is the most effective way to respond against tyranny, no matter where it is. And that is for massive, massive, massive resistance. And this country is still in some goddamn sleep state right now, or a coma, and doesn't understand that. Doesn't understand that it's not putting 100 people in the street, or 500, or 1,000. It's not putting 1 million people in the street. It's putting 10 million, 20 million, 30 million who say, "No, goddamn it, we are not going to continue. We are not going to continue." And the sad part, Doug, until that happens, there will be more arrests, there will be more reporting in every day, there will be more kettling, there will be more denying people of their First, Fourth, Fifth, Eighth, and Tenth Amendment rights until finally there are no rights left. And Doug, I got to leave it there because we have to go to a break. Thanks, Doug. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. 45 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ian. And it is for Charlie Grace Fiorella, who will be 1 year old tomorrow. Happy birthday, Charlie Grace. And her truth-seeking dad, John. Ian writes, Mike, don't ever stop stripping the bark off those right-wing sons of bitches. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Yours truly, Ian. Thank you, Ian. All right, podcast trivia time. You get the right answer to our podcast trivia question, and you get a one-year subscription to the Molloy Program. Podcast downloads every morning in your mailbox, your iPhone, your fountain pen. I hear people out there saying, fountain pen? What the hell is a fountain? Fountain pen? Fountain pen. Anyway, if you want to play podcast trivia, 877-996-2556. If you get the right answer to our multiple choice question, you do get a 1 year subscription to Molloy Program podcast downloads commercial free in your email box every morning at the crack of dawn. All right. Has a retail value of $59.60. And by the way, that brings me back to what I started the program with tonight. We truly, 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 no kidding, I'm serious, need about 1,000 podcast subscribers as quickly as possible if the show is to continue. So that comes from our accountant who sat there this morning and laughed and laughed and laughed when we took him all of our documents. And of course I've known Harold for what, 25 years, so it's not like he was being a smartass. He was just looking at all the documents and going And remember, a podcast subscription is $59.60 a year. That works out to 25 cents a program, a quarter. 25 cents. So if it's worth it to you to keep this program on the air, you will take a subscription. If it's not worth it to you, you won't. And I understand times are rough out there. It's rough for all of us, or I shouldn't say out there, everywhere. I get that. So if you can afford a quarter a day, no, 5 quarters a week to keep this program on the air, go to MikeMolloy.com, and it's there for you, how you can subscribe. Hi. All right. After the next break, which comes up fairly soon, we will do podcast trivia. So call in if you like. Paul Krugman the other day, a couple of weeks ago, he was writing about how Republicans are very, very conservative. If you were Mitt Romney, you might even say they were severely conservative. Remember when he said he was a severe conservative? You know, the only time, who was it, wrote, the only time you see severe as a modifier is right before the noun wound, you know, severely wounded, or something like severe weather. But a severe conservative, you know, this guy, this Romney, the only time he opens his mouth is to change feet. I have never seen a freak like this guy. Anyway. Some political scientists who use congressional votes to measure, conservatism find that the current Republican majority is the most conservative since 1879, which is as far back as their estimates go. Now, conservative, I would never attempt to correct Paul Krugman, but conservative is not the word. Right wing. We discussed this earlier this week. Right wing is the term, Mr. Krugman, not conservative. Right wing. But Krugman goes on, he says, and what these severe conservatives hate above all is reliance on government programs. Santorum declares that Obama is getting America hooked on, quote, the narcotic of dependency, end quote. Isn't Santorum? Don't even go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. Okay. All right. All right. Romney warns the government programs, quote, foster passivity and sloth. End quote. I guess that's easy when you have a net worth of $250 million, huh? Passivity and sloth! You goddamn old people who are getting Medicare and Social Security, you're passive. You're slothful. You scumsuckers on unemployment. You're sloths. My God. Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, requires the Staffords read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, in which the heroic capitalists struggle against the moochers trying to steal their wealth. But as Krugman points out, many readers of the Times were therefore surprised to learn from an excellent article published a couple of weeks ago that the regions of America most hook on Mr. Santorum's narcotic. In other words, the regions in which government programs account for the largest share of personal income are precisely the regions electing these severe conservatives. Huh? Wasn't real America supposed to be the land of traditional values where people don't eat Thai food and don't rely on handouts? Huh? The article made its case with maps showing the distribution of dependency. But you get the same story from a more formal comparison. Aaron Carroll of Indiana University tells us that in 2010, residents of the 10 states that Gallup ranks as most conservative received 21.2% of their income in government transfers, while the number of the 10 most liberal states received 17.1%. You see, once again, everything that a Republican says is a lie. And I'm not talking about Republican candidates for office or Republican office holders. I'm talking about anyone who has the balls to put, "I'm a Republican," out of their mouth as soon as you meet them. I'm a conservative. Well, there you go. Now, there's no mystery about this red state reliance on government programs, Krugman writes. These states are relatively poor, which means both that people have fewer sources of income other than safety net programs and that more of them qualify for so-called means-tested programs like Medicaid. And by the way, the same logic explains why there has been a jump in dependency since 2008. Contrary to what Santorum and Romney suggest, Obama has not radically expanded the safety net. He really hasn't. Not this president. Rather, the dire state of the economy has reduced incomes and made more people eligible for benefits. The safety net's the same. More people are falling into it. Anybody with a fifth grade education would understand that. But we're talking about candidates, scum, filth, Santorum, Gingrich, Ron Paul, and Romney, who think they're going to be president. Now, why do these regions that rely on the safety net elect politicians who want to tear it down? We've gone through this over and over and over again. First, there's Thomas Frank's thesis in his book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And that is this. Working class Americans are induced to vote against their own interests by the Republican Party's exploitation of social issues. And it's true that, for example, Americans who regularly attend church are more likely to vote Republican at any given level of income than those who don't. I go to church. I'm a Republican. I'm cutting my own throat. Yay, yay, yay. But I'll get my reward in heaven. Woo! Still, Krugman writes, as Columbia University's Andrew Gelman points out, the really striking red-blue voting divide is among the affluent. High-income residents of red states are overwhelmingly Republican. High-income residents of blue states only mildly more Republican than the poorer neighbors. And like Mr. Frank, Columbia University's Andrew Gelman invokes social issues. But in the opposite direction, affluent voters in the Northeast tend to be social liberals who would benefit from tax cuts, but are repelled by things like the Republicans' war on, oh, I don't know, pick something. I know, contraception. And finally, Cornell University's Suzanne Mettler points out that many beneficiaries of government programs seem confused about their own place in the system. She tells us, Krugman reports, that 44% of Social Security recipients, 43% of those receiving unemployment benefits, and 40% of those on Medicare say that they have not used a government program. You see why I refer to the American electorate as a bunch of goddamn ignoramuses? Huh? 44% of Social Security recipients, 43% of those receiving unemployment benefits, and 40% of those on Medicare say that they have, quote, not used a government program, end quote. Presumably, then, Voters imagine that pledges to slash government spending means cutting programs for, you know, someone else, not things that these people count on themselves. And this is a confusion that these right-wingers deliberately encourage. For example, Krugman writes, when Romney responded to the new Obama budget, he condemned Obama for not taking on entitlement spending, and in the very next breath, attacked him for cutting Medicare. Jesus. The truth, of course, Krugman concludes, is that the vast bulk of entitlement spending goes to the elderly, the disabled, and working families. So any significant cuts will fall largely on people who believe they don't use government programs. OMFG.
Shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who wanna be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored, or has been sponsored, by Ian in honor of little Charlie Grace Fiorella, who will be 1 year old tomorrow, and her truth-seeking dad, John. Congrats to both you guys, or to the baby. Baby's not a guy, Mike. Congratulations to Charlie Grace and to John, her dad. Ian writes, Mike, don't ever stop stripping the bark off these right-wing sons of bitches. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Yours truly, Ian. Thank you, Ian. I appreciate the sponsorship. Podcast trivia. We have an open line. 877-996-2556. Gregory is in New Jersey. Listening on XM. Hey, Gregory.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. You ready to give this a shot?
Okay, I'll try.
Okay. Here it comes, that music, podcast, trivia on the Molloy program, where you can win one of your subscription Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. All you have to do is get the right answer to our multiple choice question. All right, Gregory, here's the question. The past couple of weeks have seen the Republicans across the United States going berserk over female body parts. What particularly insane bill in Virginia almost became law? Was it A, women would be required to follow no less than 5 steps behind her husband when using Virginia's public streets? B, on the morning after her wedding night, the new bride would be required to display the sheets upon which she and her husband consummated their holy matrimony. The sheets must show at least 1 teaspoon of virginal blood. C, an unmarried woman using the public streets and byways must carry with her at all times documents attesting to her state of sexual purity. Or D, any woman seeking to terminate a pregnancy must submit to the vaginal insertion of a wand that would then send sound waves through her uterus in order to produce an image of the mass of fetal cells growing there. Which one was it, Gregory?
It's D.
D. You're absolutely right. Oh, God. I mean, this is where we live. Oh, hold on. The boss wants to say something.
I'm just, the thing that's bothering me is I'm not sure how these Republican men who are clapping and applauding this control they're going to have over women's bodies, how are they going to pay for all these babies? Because I don't see them running out to the, you know, to the drugstore to buy a supply of condoms or suddenly get a bunch of vasectomies. So if their women can't have abortions and they can't use contraceptives, Who's gonna raise all the children?
The state.
No. They don't like that either. They don't want any state-run programs.
Kathy,
they don't want any subsidies.
You're making the assumption that these people are thinking this stuff through. They're not.
Like,
they're not thinking through anything. This is anti-woman contempt.
But it's gonna be like one of those reality TV shows, like, you know, John and Kate plus 47, or say there's just gonna be babies everywhere. You know, women are gonna say, "Well, this is what you wanted." Now, who's paying for them?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. It just makes me go,
Yeah, well, okay. I don't know how to answer that, Gregory, and I don't think you do either. I think Kathy was just tossing out the possibility of this madness taken to its ultimate conclusion. All right, you wanted to make a comment, too, I believe, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I have a comment. I'm currently in the military, and I've been in the military for a long time. And where I am stationed, I think it's probably have to be the dumbest people, the racist people I have ever been around.
And
Point in station. Everything at I'm sorry?
No, I was going to ask you where you're stationed, but go ahead, Gregory.
I'll tell you. I'm stationed 177 Fighter Wing.
Yeah.
In Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey.
And now, the people there, how are they? You know,
oh my God! Everything is Fox News.
Oh yeah, okay.
If people read history and knew about how this country evolved and what this country has come from, they would know. I'm gonna give you a perfect example.
All right.
Let's start with Dick Cheney. Let's start with him. Here's a man who took 5 deferments to make sure that he would not get drafted into Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
That's point number one. Number two, he doesn't go there, so what does he do? He goes to be a senior-ranking senator out of Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
But let's take it a step further. He goes to be defense secretary. And then, eventually, into the vice president of the United States. Not only does he have that on his resume, but now he is also the CEO of Halliburton, which are making billions. Billions.
From war.
This man has never served a day in the military. But they love him. They can't get enough of him.
I know. Listen, it's getting the point here. I live in the Atlanta area. And if I go someplace where Fox News, you know, like a shop or a store or a hot dog stand or a laundromat, and I go in, whatever the business is, and they have Fox on the television, I will politely go to the manager and ask them to please take off the fascist propaganda and maybe run a movie or the Weather Channel. And when they tell me to shut up and sit down and mind my own business, which they have every right to do, I'm in their business, I just walk out the door and forget about it. But I hear what you're saying. Gregory, stay on the line. We're coming up for a big top of the hour break here. Just stay right there. Kathy will get the information for your podcast subscription. And thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you checking in. And congratulations on getting the podcast. Don't hang up. Stay right there. Kathy will come to you in a second. We'll be right back. Truth Seekers, stay with us. 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Daniel. And I don't know if I should give your last name or not, Daniel. I'll just say Daniel. Anyway, here's the message. Mike, my girlfriend Melody and I are huge fans of your show and love that we can hear the unvarnished truth from you each night. I'd like to wish my beautiful Melody a wonderful birthday and to thank her for sticking around a dumb lummox like me. Come on. Come on, Daniel. Melody probably wouldn't stick around if you were dumb lummox. Thanks for all you do, Mike and Kathy. You both are the best. Thanks, Daniel, and happy birthday to Melody. I love that name, Melody. We talked about naming Molly that. Melody. Thanks, thanks, Daniel. He's our sponsor this hour.
Maybe your next daughter.
No, no. No, 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 no. I'm daughtered out. Now, it's happening in Pennsylvania. I just got, who'd the email come from? Malachi in Saskatoon. Another state joins the Republican transvaginal war on women. Have you heard about this? Now it's Pennsylvania. House Bill 1077. Here's what it says. An act providing for ultrasound test requirements to determine gestational ages of unborn children, semicolon, establishing the right to view ultrasound image and ultrasound video of unborn child and the right to observe or hear the fetal heartbeat, semicolon, providing for powers and duties of the Department of Health and for duties of physicians performing abortions, semicolon, requiring certain reports to be filed with the Department of Health, semicolon, imposing administrative sanctions and criminal penalties, semicolon, and providing for remedies. Legalese to say, girls, here it comes again. Now it's Pennsylvania. Man. And you know, there are a lot of women out there who are going to vote Republican in the presidential election. You know why? Because, as was pointed out by somebody the other night, you have women who are looking for that sweet little patriarchal pat on the head. Good dog, good girl, good thing, good creature. That's a good girl. That's good. This is what, some of these, you know, like CWA, Concerned Women of America, concerned about what? And the Phyllis Schlafly gang. How can a woman vote Republican? I don't get, well, come on, Mike. That's like, you know, how can anybody vote Republican? But this is a full frontal war. I mean, there's no holds barred here. The Republicans are declaring themselves, we're going to put you bitches back where you belong or die trying. That's exactly what they're saying. The problems began in 1920 when y'all got the right to vote permanently. There was an experiment with it back in the, early 19th century in this country. I never knew about that until somebody pointed that out to me. And I think it was only in Maryland. Was it Maryland? New Jersey? Someplace. But in 1920. I mean, there are people alive today, I think, yeah, of course, who lived at a time when women in this country could not vote. But the Republican Party is declaring itself, we are the party of a violent, vicious Christian God that rivals the violent, vicious Islamic God that rivals the violent, vicious Hindu gods and the violent, vicious Jewish God. We're all here to tell you, women, you know, in Israel, the ultra-Orthodox want their own buses for the men. Women, walk! What about the women who are arrested at the Wailing Wall, there to insert their prayers, arrested, demanded that they be arrested by the ultra-Orthodox? Catholics in this country, right-wing Christians, telling women they're going to have transvaginal probes inserted, whether they like it or not. Muslim mullahs ordering women beheaded because they were out in public, or at the very least, beaten because they were out in public without a man beside them. Boy, religion's wonderful, isn't it? Isn't fundamentalist religion? Isn't it just beautiful? Isn't it just so lovely? How can a woman in this country vote Republican? Email here from Todd in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mike, I dropped out of college in 1976 to work full-time on Eugene McCarthy's independent presidential bid. From 1980 until 1984, I worked my ass off for the Citizens Party. Barry Commoner was at the top of the ticket in 1980. Sonia Johnson in 1984. During this period, my Citizens Party in Minnesota supported slates of candidates from the city council and school board all the way to the U.S. Congress. Our enthusiasm was great, but our impact was difficult to measure. Perhaps it was marginal at best. I even ran for the city council myself as a Citizens Party endorsed candidate and received 98 votes, not nearly enough to make a difference. Fast forward to 2011. I had the privilege of using instant runoff voting. My first choice was the Green Party city council candidate in St. Paul. But this candidacy didn't prevail, even though Jim Ivey came in a respectable second place after the first round. Eventually, my second choice vote helped put the Democrat, Dave Thune, over the top. This is my roundabout way of saying that I'm willing to vote for the Green Party when there is ranked choice voting. But at the presidential level, I am sticking with Obama and all future Democrats that come to pass. I appreciate all the veins that you pop night after night. Take care for your family's sake. There are so many Girl Scout cookies still to sell. I'd hate to see you die in vain. V-E-I-N. Todd. Todd, won't happen. Thank you for the concern, though. It's not my doctor who worries. It's my accountant. My doctor gave up a long time ago. Josh is in Seattle listening on XM. Hello, Josh.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question. Do you think Obama's going to get reelected?
Do I think he is? Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he is, too, because he's got way too much backing. He's going to have plenty of money.
Well, I don't think that's the reason he's going to get reelected. I think he's going to get reelected because the opposition to his being reelected is pure, unadulterated fascism. His brand of fascism is not as pure and as unadulterated. His brand is hedged. Every time he signs something that can only be interpreted as fascist, he also includes a signing statement that says, I really didn't want to do this, and I really won't terribly, completely, absolutely enforce it, but, you know, I'm going to sign it anyway. So, you know, you have fascism and fascism light. Which one do you want?
I don't know, man. I think he pulled a lot of people to vote for him, but I don't know what's going to happen this time, but I don't know. I didn't vote for him, but, you know, I don't hate the guy, but I just don't agree with everything he has to say.
Did you vote in the presidential election, the last one?
Yeah, I did.
Did you vote Republican?
Yeah, I don't like Obama, you know, but I hate to say it. The Republicans this year aren't looking that good. They're really not. I mean...
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Josh, it is a mystery. It's a puzzle. It's an enigma. It's very strange. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate you checking in.
How else can we forget? We know something so unfair when the man of the hour came.
21 past the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Oh, okay.
Good.
I had two quick things for you. One was that next time you get one of these right-wingers talking about a fetus being a baby, you should mention that that's no different than trying to tell everyone you have chicken with your bacon in the morning for breakfast as opposed to an egg. That's the similarity.
Right.
And the other one, I don't know if you had ever talked about this before, but I was listening to a show on the weekend, a travel show, and they talked about the city of Calcutta in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It was the how that had the famous relic for the Catholic Church of Jesus' foreskin, apparently.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there's a book called the, what is it, 1 second, the, An Irreverent Curiosity in Search of Church's Strangest Relic in Italy's Oldest Town. And this guy went on this journey to try to find it. And apparently was stolen in 1983,
mm-hmm.
and apparently somebody from the Vatican stole it to bring it there. And it's supposedly sitting in the Vatican all there, and I'm thinking to myself that Jesus died, was buried, and rose to heaven except for part of him that was left down here, I guess.
God.
I thought it was the most bizarre thing, and the guy was this Rick Steve. He does a show on PBS about travel, and he was talking about this like with a serious tone. I'm thinking, how can you do this if someone actually thinks they have this? This was more for like church night, but I didn't get through on one.
Well, I've never heard of this.
I didn't either until I heard that show, and I said, I'm sitting here listening, thinking, these guys are joking, right? And they just kept going on. It wasn't a joke.
Oh, my God.
I wrote a book about it and everything, looking for this, and he apparently got into the Vatican library archives on a false premise of searching for something else to find out information about this instead. So if you get a chance to check that out, it's a very bizarre story.
You know, I would probably stay away from that one, Paul. I mean, the whole thing just kind of creeps me out.
Yeah, I mean, just,
why would you keep it? Well, if you're going to...
If it was real, but it isn't.
Well, no, but then you got to wonder where in the hell it came from.
Exactly, yeah.
Ah!
Yeah, it's weird.
Jeez.
And I did see yesterday, too, what's his name, Bill Maher giving $1 million to Obama's campaign, and
yeah.
He gave some interesting reasoning for it. But if you had watched the comedy thing he did, it kind of, he told the story as he was going along why he'd end up doing that. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, given $1 million to... I mean, I wonder if Maher understands. I don't care who he gives $1 million to. He could give it to somebody in the Green Party. But in doing that, he's perpetuating the very thing that has corrupted the entire system. And
yeah, well, he,
go ahead.
His point was that he can't afford and the country can't afford to have, no matter, he brought up some things he didn't like about Obama during his kind of thing.
Right,
and
right.
He said about how much he didn't like about Republicans, and he can't afford to have Republicans getting in charge is what he's gotten to. So this is the best way he figures he could spend his money right now because of the, ruling, the...
Citizens United.
Citizens United
right.
ruling, yeah. He says that, and he thinks that other people should do the same thing, just help save things.
Yeah, no, I understand the argument behind even the Obama campaign deciding to go ahead and fight sludge with additional sludge.
Right.
I understand that. It's the same thing, though, I think, that who was it that said, I don't know if it was Einstein or Schweitzer or Elie Wiesel, who said, or maybe it was Gandhi, an eye for an eye simply means that eventually everybody's blind.
Exactly, yes.
And you know, for Obama, who made a pledge, I mean, it's just one more thing that he, you know, one more broken promise, one more cop-out. And in the real world of politics, I know there are people who listen to this program and say, Malloy, get your head out of your ass. In the real world of politics, what do you expect Obama to do? And my only answer to that is, well, I expect Obama eventually, at some point, somewhere, sometime down the line, to take a stand and really mean it. And
right.
And if taking a stand, I mean, he could have turned it into one hell of a political point for his reelection by saying, I said I won't, I won't. Now, what I need, you know, whatever he needs. You know, I need a million people to send me $100 a piece, and then I've got my 100 million. Of course, that doesn't mean anything. Adelson, this crazed billionaire casino thug, Sheldon Adelson, has now said he'll commit $100 million to get Newt elected. So, you know, what do you say? I would like, though, to see a Democrat, because I know Republicans are incapable of this. It's genetically impossible. I'd like to see a Democratic candidate take a stand on ethical principles or moral principles and say, I said I was not going to take money from PACs and super PACs, these huge donations, and I'm not going to do it. But I personally think Obama could have jujitsu'd this whole thing into his favor by not deciding to take super PAC money. You know, I don't know. But that's why a lot of people consider me to be extremely naive. Paul, thanks a lot, man. I got a boogie. I appreciate your call. Take care, Paul. Take care. Bye. Sorry, didn't mean to talk over the liner. Yeah. The Sour is sponsored by Daniel, who writes, Mike, my girlfriend Melody and I are huge fans of your show and love that we can hear the unvarnished truth from you each night. I'd like to wish my beautiful Melody a wonderful birthday. And to thank her for sticking around a dumb lummox like me. Oh, come on. Come on, Daniel. Thanks for all you do, Mike and Kathy. You both are the best. Happy birthday, Melody. All right. Daniel, turn to Melody right now. Just do me a favor, okay? Just come on. Turn to Melody right now and just say to her, am I a dumb lummox? Go ahead. Okay, what did she say? Oh, okay. Well, then never mind. No, you know what she said. Anyway, thank you, Daniel. And happy birthday, Melody. Robert is in Elko, Georgia. Hello, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I used to listen to you when I lived in Atlanta. It was pretty good.
On WSB?
Yes.
You talk about years ago.
That was years and years ago. And now I live in South Georgia. And I was listening at the beginning of your show when you were talking about how the news coverage and businesses in South Georgia.
Right. Well, not just South.
Always to be turned to Fox News.
Yeah, not just South Georgia. All over the metro Atlanta area, too.
Oh, well, it's pretty bad in South Georgia here. And it's especially bad in doctor's offices.
Yeah.
And, there's one bad thing about that, and that's that they've got a captive audience, and people can't get out very easily. But there was one interesting place I went when I had a medical procedure done, and this doctor had it worked out pretty well. He had two TV screens, and the TV screens were facing each other across the waiting room, so that no matter where you sat in the waiting room, you got to see Fox News. And the waiting room was huge because he had lots and lots of people waiting all the time for him. So there were at least 20 people in the waiting room. And the interesting thing is that the people had nothing to do but watch this.
Right.
The nurses, before they opened the doors, would cut Fox News on, and they would set it on, and they kept the controls. and they kept the volume on loud. So conversation died down, and most people listened to Fox News. But they didn't just listen to it. When I looked over at them, they seemed like they were just mesmerized by it.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was one man, he was about my age, about 50, and he was actually standing up and looking at the screen, and he was oblivious to the fact that I was looking over at him, looking at the screen, just amazed that he was staring at the screen. It was like he had never seen such a beautiful thing in all his life. So, to me, I'm wondering, you know, at what point does this stop being propaganda and it becomes something?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what to call it at that point when people are that attracted to it.
Well, how did you wind up in Elko, Robert?
I have a friend who lives here, and that's where I'm living now. I would prefer to live in Atlanta, I think. Elko's got its charms.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it does, but you sound a much more sophisticated person than somebody who would live in... I know where Elko is. I'm real familiar with South Georgia. In a different lifetime, I spent an awful lot of time in South Georgia working for Look Magazine. I'm talking about a long time ago. So I know those rural and semi-rural and small-town areas down there, and they're still as scary today to me as they were 35, 40 years ago. So I don't know.
What's really scary? It's not just that the businesses will have it on Fox News, but it's that the doctor's offices are too. Which means that it means that the doctor it reflects what the doctor
right exactly
about the country.
Exactly. Oh my God!
And so with this doctor, I just left, and I mean, I stopped seeing him after a while. I couldn't stand Fox News anymore.
I understand.
But I did go to another doctor's office, and that was in Macon. And once again, it was Fox News, and the nurses had the controls. And so I just walked up to the counter. First thing, there were four people sitting there, and I said, please cut it off, Fox News. I don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just looked at me very snarkily, and they finally agreed. They just cut it to some other station, you know, NBC, CSNBC or something like that, you know. But whatever it was, I wanted to... You know, I got tired of it.
Yeah.
And I was able to do it there, but...
Well, you know, you're right. It's everywhere. And I have a solution, you know, that saved these people, no matter what kind of business it is, saved them from trying to propagandize their customers or their clients or their patients. And that's very simple. Put the damn television, if there has to be one there, put the damn television on the Weather Channel. Everybody likes to see the weather. Everybody talks about the weather. It's the one topic you can still talk about and not get people all head up and all upset and all screaming and yelling. So put it on the Weather Channel. That's all they have to do. Very simple. Unless they're trying to propagandize their clients.
I would say that when this guy had two LCD screens facing both directions so that you couldn't avoid it no matter what, he was definitely trying to propagandize.
Oh my God. And,
you know, of course, when you're sitting in a waiting room in South Georgia, you hear some pretty rough stuff.
Right.
About Obama and
oh my God, yes,
and possibly atheists too. And there was one lady, and she was saying that she voted for Obama, and she knew that she had voted for the devil.
Yeah.
And
it so happened
that Fox News was playing at the time she was talking, and she was just talking to all of us in general, and so that's kind of the tone of the conversation down here, and. Yeah, I guess I'd like to be back in Atlanta, but I don't know. You know, I guess I'll fight the battle down here.
There you go. All right, Robert, thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in, and thanks for listening on Sirius. I do appreciate it, okay?
You're welcome.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. Yeah, I had a similar experience to that, I don't know, about 8 months ago. I went for my every 5 years stress test. Yeah, I do that. I also get colonoscopies. And if you don't get one, you're a damn fool. You really are. I don't care, you know. Get one. And a colonoscopy. And a stress test, you know, where they wire you up and you get on that damn treadmill. But it's a huge cardiac clinic. On the north side of Atlanta, really, it's a super place. I mean, the latest technology and stuff. And I went just for the hell of it. You know, I diagnosed myself. I said to my physician, a good friend of mine now, I just said, hey, I want a stress test. He said, all right, I'll write you a script to go do that. And so I go in there, and there's like 30 or 40 cardiologists who work there. And if you've ever been to a cardiac clinic, you know that you see some patients, some folks there who obviously are struggling with cardiac disease of one sort or another. And it can be, you know, it can be pretty grim to not be in that condition. And, you know, I started feeling embarrassed after a while that I'm sitting there without any obvious problem. And, you know, seriously, I usually don't know how to handle that when I get in a situation like that. So I just bury my head in a magazine. But in this particular case, just like in so many other places, they had a couple, three TV screens, and they're on Fox News. And I finally went up to the receptionist, tried to make a joke. I said, you know, one of the reasons you probably have a lot of patients in here is because of what you have on the television that gives people heart attacks. Well, wrong thing to say in a cardiac clinic, I guess, because it wasn't very jokey to her. Well, when I finally got back to see the physician, the cardiologist, it was a friend of Kathy's, and when I finally got back to see him, I told him what was going on in the waiting room, and of course, he's not that way. He just said, well, damn, I've tried to tell those women to get it off of Fox. Try to put it on, get them to put it on the Weather Channel. See, that's where I got the idea. And he said, I can't do anything with them, you know, so to hell with it. I just don't even go in the waiting room. And that's the way he talked. So I had the stress test, and for those of you who are concerned, no, I'm fine, no problem. And it was pretty intense. You ever had one of those? Phew. I'm sorry, that was very boring. The point of the story was simply that no matter where you go, and to put Fox News on in a clinic that is devoted to cardiology, blah, 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 to me seems like you're trying to build your client base just a little bit. You know what I'm saying with that, Booby? Of course you do. Email here from Richard. Mike, I just heard your plea for 1,000 more subscribers. Count me in. Oh, the subject line is one new subscriber, 999 to go. I started listening to you on AM 1090 in Seattle years ago. Since then, I moved to New York City, and I listened to you on AM 1090 online as well as on your website. You're one of two talk show hosts who match my level of outrage and anger, and you have the guts to say it. Keep up the great work. I'm an avid listener and can't imagine the internet tubes without your voice being monitored by the CIA. Best wishes, Richard in New York. Thank you, Richard, very, very much. We'll be right back.
In the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Nobility are famous for no reason. Mary Antoinette enjoyed her cake. She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. Its makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have ditched the no-smoking light. Cause history is made by stupid people. Clever people wouldn't even try. If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die.
Before the hour. Once again, this hour has been sponsored by Daniel. Daniel writes, Mike, my girlfriend Melody and I are huge fans of your show and love that we can hear the unvarnished truth from you each night. I'd like to wish my beautiful Melody a wonderful birthday and to thank her for sticking around a dumb lummox like me. Thanks for all you do, Mike and Kathy. You both are the best. Thank you, Daniel. And I don't think Melody would consider you to be a lummox. And happy birthday, Melody. Gotta love that name, Melody. All right, where are we? Dalen is in L.A. Hi, Dalen.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm well. You know, just as all of this talk about Fox News and doctors' offices and businesses reminded me, a few years back, a friend of mine worked for a bank, and I know we don't give banks a lot of credit, but they do some consumer behavior research, and Wells Fargo, to the best of my knowledge, researched this issue about playing television in the lobby, and they found that apolitical channels like, you know, the Weather Channel, I think you mentioned,
right,
and primarily the Food Network was one of the most popular channels, were the channels that were selected to play in their in their lobbies at their bank.
Well, that, you know, that makes sense. Because, I mean, it makes sense to me. A bank is a business. I won't get into my feeling about banks tonight, but, you know, it is a business. Why would they put on something? Why wouldn't they put on something that is politically neutral? I mean, that makes sense. To have something like the Food Channel or the Discovery Channel or the Weather Channel. You know, it just makes perfect sense to me. But the guy who, Roger Ailes and the people who set up Fox News were very, very cunning in the way they did it, the way they hooked themselves up with these cable services. I think if the story ever comes out about how Fox News managed to get to the point that it's at now, I think people are going to just kind of, it's going to be a jaw-dropping story. I'm not saying necessarily anything illegal was done to get Fox News where it is now. But there was an awful lot of pressure, an awful lot of screw tightening on cable systems around the country. So, you know, there's a story there to be told. I don't know that it'll ever be told. It really doesn't matter.
I watched the one documentary a while back called OutFox. This is some years ago.
Right.
Which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was in that movie for about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
I was.
Really?
Yeah, I was in it when John Kasich, who's now the governor of Ohio, he had a program on Fox, and like a dummy, this was about 7 years ago. Yeah, Kathy was pregnant for Molly, and I think it was on Valentine's Day, as a matter of fact. And I got invited to be a guest on Kasich's program, so I went to the Fox studio here in Atlanta, and wound up, make a long story short, I was on for about 4 minutes, and wound up, you know, just taking off my microphone and walking off the set. Because Kasich is a punk. How he got to be governor of Ohio, I have no idea. But when he was a talk show host on Fox, he was just a complete jackass. And I more or less told him that and then, you know, just took off the mic and walked off. Well, there's about 3 seconds of that scene that's in the movie OutFoxed. And you know, I thought, oh boy, my moment of fame. Where's my Emmy? Where's my Academy? Oh, never mind. All right, Dalen, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Have a good one.
All right, sir, you too. Take care. Yeah, OutFoxed.
You were mouthing dirty words.
I was mouthing dirty words? Well yeah. I mean, what that bastard and his partner, who is the other guy? I mean, I got caught between this Republican buzzsaw, and I just figured, no, you guys are kidding. You think I'm going to sit here? And they got my mic before I could get out a real good MF-er.
It was Hugh Hewitt.
Hugh Hewitt, that's who it was. The old vomit man. Hugh Hewitt! Hugh Hewitt!
But no, what happened was they just cut your mic off. You were making too many salient points, and so you were mid-sentence, and they
Click.
Cut your mic off, and then you could see you on camera for another second. You turned your head and looked like to the cameraman and said, "They cut my mic off." And then you mouthed a couple of things, and then they
Easy now.
And then you started standing up, and
right.
It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was a funny bit. It was a funny bit. That's when, I think during that conversation, he said, "Well, what stations do you work for?" And I said, "I'm on Sirius." He said, "Oh, one of those rinky-dink satellite shows?" Bastard. Let me leave you with this. State representatives in Wyoming today advanced legislation to launch a study into what Wyoming should do in the event of a complete economic or political collapse in the United States. It's a doomsday scenario that they're writing in the Wyoming legislature. House Bill 85 passed on the first reading by a voice vote. It will create a state-run government continuity task force, which would study and prepare Wyoming for potential catastrophes, from disruptions in food and energy supplies to a complete meltdown of the federal government. The task force would look at the feasibility of Wyoming issuing its own alternative currency if needed. And House members there approved an amendment today by State Representative Kermit Brown, a Republican of Laramie, to have the task force also examine conditions under which Wyoming would need to implement its own military draft, raise a standing army, and acquire strike aircraft and an aircraft carrier. That's where they lost me. An aircraft carrier in Wyoming? Jesus God. It's a Republican, all right. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, y'all. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy.
At Quicken Loans.